Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can we try and make a start? Okay, could we have order of businesses as the agenda? Any apologies?
Apologies, Councillor Montgomery, Coventry and Young.
Okay, any declarations of interest, you can take at any time. Move on to item 4.1, commercial operations. Ricky.
Thanks, Chair. I'll go through and highlight some of the progress that we've been making in the last quarter, and then go on to some of the challenges that are emerging, and then pause at that point in time for any questions. In terms of health and safety, we've done quite a bit of work on the management arrangements, and essentially that's about addressing some of the concerns that we've had around the relative risks in a number of areas, and it's suggested there that we're roughly halfway through that programme, and I'd acknowledge that's been a lot of good work, both with the health and safety team, but also involving the trade unions. I touch on the second paragraph about the health and safety training calendar, and just to kind of pick up on a point that was made yesterday at Council, and it was about generating income. One of the positive spin-offs of the work that we're doing in terms of health and safety training is that where we have space available, we're offering that to other partners, other organisations, so we're actually realising an income from that. Moving down to kind of road services, I just highlight there the latest phase of the LED programmes complete. We're now approximately 17% of our network is LED. With the funding that's in the current capital programme, within the next couple of years, we'll be around about 25% LED lighting. Going down to waste services, we've obviously rolled out the new food waste collection services, and when we had discussions with Zero Waste Scotland, in particular focusing on some of the performances that were witnessed across Scotland, we kind of reckoned that we would probably for the year get somewhere between 2,000 and 2,500 tonnes out of the residual waste stream. Currently, performance is up on that, and we're looking at, by the end of the year, if things stay as they are, we're looking to recycle probably nearer 3,000 tonnes in that regard. So that's a kind of a positive side there. In terms of land services, it's worth just spending a minute or two just on the work that's being done there. Of all my services, it's the one where we get a lot of requests for, and we're able to kind of meet most of those requests in terms of youngsters coming and working with us. And where that has a really good spin-off is going forward in terms of those youngsters that then come forward looking for apprentice positions. We normally have 4 or 5 of these each year in that area, and kind of further from that, that kind of almost programme, if you like, giving them an early insight into what it's like within our land services and then taking them on as trainees. Over the last 2 or 3 years at the college, we've had the top apprentices at college. So it's a programme that's well established, and it's actually having huge benefits for us. Moving on to some of the emerging challenges within road services, just to highlight that the work of the ELBF group, there is a committee that's set up to take that forward, and the challenge will be about making some real changes within the road service environment. Two things. One, to address some of the skill sets that we perhaps will be struggling to have in future. But secondly, it's about how we can work collaboratively across the road service network and essentially get better value for our money. In terms of Police Scotland and the Traffic Warden Service, I mentioned there that we've got a 1-year extension. I brought the paper to the Council on 9th of February giving an update, and that's kind of progressing well at this time. Just a kind of to touch on some of the work on fleet and travel services, where positive discussions with City Car Club, we're rolling that out to Dalkeith in the car park where the bowling stadium is. We're also in discussions with the City Car Club in Abellio to have a facility at Newton Grange, and there's an existing facility at Esk Valley. So that's kind of working quite positively. Going on to waste services, there is still a significant issue in terms of the processing of our blue bin material. I've got a further meeting this Friday with Viridor. We have just had some legal information back just as I was coming up the stair, and I've not had a chance to read it, but it is still a real issue, and it's not a Midlothian issue, I have to stress. This is a Scotland-wide issue, but it could have implications, particularly from a budgetary sense. In terms of the two waste facilities, it's just to pause there, that the commissioning of the food waste at Miller Hill will begin very shortly, and the plant will be up and running to its full capacity by June. So there's a drip feed process. And we're now coming to the point where we'll shortly be looking to sign the contract for the residual waste project. The period at which we have to stand still to allow for any objections to the process up to now ends at the end of March, and at that point we'll be able to sign that contract for a residual waste project. And then the last one that I'm going to highlight is an ongoing issue at Iron Mill Steps. Members may be aware of a previous paper and work that was done there, but unfortunately the very, very heavy rain that occurred round about the kind of Christmas time has caused further movement in that area. So we're waiting on a consultant's report. We're working closely with them, and it's likely that I'll bring a further report back to council in due course. Chair, I'll pause at that point and happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Ricky. Ian and Lisa.
Thanks, Derek. Can I just say on the rollout of the food waste, that was once again an excellent project. I've had no complaints at all, as with the rollout of the red and blue recyclates, we've got no complaints at all, and yet in Edinburgh, whenever they do anything like this, it seems to hit the evening news with lots of complaints. So a tremendous job all around there, I think. I was going to ask you, on the anaerobic digester, which you were saying is about to be commissioned, it would be quite useful, I think, for councillors to see it in operation, if that's possible. At some point over the next year or two, it would be fine. I'm not saying it should be as soon as it comes into operation, but I certainly would appreciate that. You mentioned about the City Car Club coming out to Midlothian again. That sounds excellent news, and hopefully there'll be good take-up. And also on the Borders railway line. Now, there was a commitment, I think, by Abellio some time ago that they would introduce cycle racks to be able to hire bikes in the same way as you have them in many cities. Do you know if there's any progress on that at all?
Just going back, Councillor, on the points, in terms of the feedback, I'll actually give that back to the guys, because they do appreciate getting positive feedback. In terms of Miller Hill, absolutely, I can arrange a visit when it's fully up and running. In terms of the last point, we've not seen any progress with Abellio, but we do have regular meetings with them. So what I'll do is I'll get an update and I'll come back to you on that one.
Lisa.
Thank you, Derek. Couple of points, Ricky. The severe weather plan, thank you very much for your team's flexibility. I appreciate, notwithstanding all your attempts in the past to engage with members of the public and community organisations to give you input when you're putting the programme together, that you have been unfortunately targeted with some complaints that, to my mind, didn't seem very justified or justifiable or realistic at any point. But thank you very much for your flexibility in listening to those people who did come back retrospectively rather than having responded to the timorously to the invitation to participate. Congratulations on the positive destinations contribution. I think since it's a priority for this council, I know I'm sure we're all as pleased to see that the council itself is taking a very active role in delivering that programme, and I know from speaking to some of the people involved in it how very pleased they are, and the families likewise. So if you could pass on our appreciation to those involved, because a lot of it's about the quality of support the youngsters get as well as the actual training itself, and I know that's second to none. On the issue of the hop-on, hop-off bus, and it's been raised already in the Chamber this morning, and I know it was raised when it went to Council, the fact that this service is being commissioned, and there have been a number of comments both in the media and in this Chamber and elsewhere about the fact that it doesn't accommodate provision of voguery visits, which, given that when we talk about tourism, it isn't just about external tourism, but presumably also including our own residents as tourists to that extent. It's a very popular destination, but unfortunately not as much used as many of the people who would like to use it are able to, because of the lack of public transport, and not all families can afford private transport. And I will keep banging on about this as long as is necessary. Please can we give serious consideration to voguery being part of that provision, since it seems that we're not able to find any other alternative provision, and if that latter is a possibility and I'm unaware of it, I know it wasn't when I last pushed that particular envelope, I'd be very grateful to hear if we have any change to that, and if not, please can we look at that with regard to voguery. Can I add my congratulations and echo remarks already made about the zero waste and all the progress that's being made from that team. Really, your team is delivering an awful lot of projects all at once, it seems, and the plethora of those and the range of those projects seems to be pretty huge, and the fact that they're all coming in on time and apparently without a lot of the challenges being failed, most of them being addressed enthusiastically, it seems, is, and we should be applauding your teams. So thank you very much for all the efforts.
Thanks very much. I'll pass those positive comments on to the team, because they're the ones that deserve the praise, not me. In terms of the hop-off bus, obviously you'll recall a few years back where there was a supported bus provision to Voguery, and disappointingly the numbers were always very low over a period. However, the discussions that kind of first kicked off in relation to the hop-off bus, we did have quite an extensive route from one end it took in Voguery to the other end it took in Hill End. When we started discussing with some of the experts, and I'm not talking about necessarily the attractions themselves, but it was Visit Scotland, and it was kind of around the discussions that they had in terms of trying to establish who it is you're targeting with this bus. And the numbers that were quoted were some 4.5 million people come to Edinburgh every year, and Visit Scotland felt that outlying areas like ourselves should realistically target those 20% that are looking for a day trip somewhere. So it came from that. And then we had discussions around some of the experiences, for example, in Falkirk, where they had a similar venture. Falkirk did start off that wide network, but what tended to happen is people stopped using it because I'm sitting on a bus for so long going to places I don't want to go to. So it was very much about shrinking the service to have A, more frequent runs around the attractions, and B, to reduce the time that people would be on that service. So as a consequence, that's kind of where we are now. But that's not to say, depending on where this goes, how successful it may be, then we can look at expanding or something different. Just touching on that, one of the discussions that ran in parallel with the hop-on bus specifically for the rail was some of the other facilities. So we had still got Hill End, which has for the adrenaline junkies. Rise was seen as something similar, and so there's another kind of, we've got the adventure playground etc. up in Voguery. So there was almost some discussions around that may be something as a standalone. So that's something that we'll be looking at to take forward and see where that can go.
Alec Denmargo.
Ricky, I just want to touch on the recycling and combined heat plant at Miller Hill. I've been working close with the planning, David Mulholland, and we've set up a subgroup within the the area, Danderhaugh, Newton Village, Miller Hill area, there's subgroups which I've been asked to chair. And we've not had a meeting yet, but I got an email just last week that we'll be forwarding a meeting soon, because they want to take the community with them on this. And I can't remember, they've got another plant somewhere there now, down south. Is it Lincoln? Aye, Lincoln, aye. So it looks as though there's going to be a visit to Lincoln. So it might be opened up for, like, say, Ian yourself, and that could go and see it for myself. But just really for an update, because I've not been doing for 2 or 3 weeks. The last thing I was doing, there was traffic lights for Alcry at New Craig Hall, Kerrick's Ride, the Fort and Kinnear Park and that. But the road down to New Craig Hall, that was getting all winding. And I believe that, has that now been done, Ricky?
Yeah, it's near enough complete. We've got some work to do at the junction with the traffic island, and you're absolutely correct. That was linked to the planning consent for the residual plant rather than for the food waste plant, and that's due to be finished very, very shortly.
Margot.
Thanks, Chair. It's to do with the land slip at Iron Mill Steps. It's surprising that it stood there all the years, and suddenly this spell of bad weather makes it slip. You mentioned there we're waiting on a consultant's report, but if I recall way back when we discussed all the various options, there was a lot of options in it, and obviously there was costs attached to them, but there was quite concise information within them, and there was consultant reports there. So why are we commissioning, if you like, another consultant's report, which is obviously going to cost a bit more money?
Sorry, I had to put that off. Yeah, it's actually building on the last report. We've actually got an option that's being put forward as a potential to reduce the potential expenditure. So we're actually exploring that. It's all to do with actually pinning the existing path, etc., into the rock. Without getting too technical, essentially you've got quite a severe slope, and the stuff's just sliding off that, so it's how we can pin it in. So the actual cost of what we're doing is still contained within the money that had previously been agreed, so we're hoping to get that solution in the next week or so, and if that works and we try that, then hopefully that will stop the deterioration that we've got.
Thanks for that, Ricky. Okay, if there's no other questions, Ricky, thank you. Now we want to item 4.3 and 4.2, sorry, finance and regulated services. Gary Fairley.
Thanks, Chair. The report sort of laid out a way you'd be familiar with, and intend to focus on what's a strategic focus for the team, that delivering transformational change, and really doing that in a way that helps the council secure financial sustainability while achieving its priority outcomes. The key things we've been working on in the quarter are the review of local government workers' pay and grading, the whole Delivering Excellence programme and supporting services to progress that, and clearly culminating yesterday in terms of next year, the Council's overall financial strategy. And those remain the sort of key drivers and the key focus as we go into the final part of the year and indeed into next year. In terms of achievements and challenges, we've continued to see a suite of financial reports come forward to Council, setting out where we are in terms of performance in year and projections for future year. The next key event will be the outturns and medium-term financial projections refresh, which I expect to come forward to Council with in June. We've also seen in the quarter, at last year we'll see that the financial close for New Battle High School, and that took place in during February. Some specific areas that members will already be seeing the benefit of in terms of transformational change. We've now got the committee management system up and running, and you can already see the impact that has in terms of the papers in front of you and the minutes, etc., that come out. We've come out the other side of the fire at Hopefield Primary School in record storage, and we've now in the period seen our full shift of our records over at Iron Mountain, which gives us compliance with the requirements of records management, cost effectiveness, and really making sure we're especially our historic records are in a much better environment for their retention. We've also seen through particularly digital services, working in conjunction with colleagues in property services, the continued benefits of the eWIM programme. Now got all the staff into Midlothian House, and you know, the teams, certainly in my area, are bedded down quite well, and people enjoying working in the new environment. Some immediate challenges that are coming up, particularly in digital, we get to the April and we need to make sure we achieve our PSN compliance, and indications are that everything's okay with that. Rolling out the digital strategy in terms of where we go next and how we use digital solutions to transform the business. And as part of that, we're looking at the moment about our wider information networks and how we secure that for the future. And one of the areas we're looking at there is our relationship with SWAN, the Scottish Wide Area Network, what that solution gives us, what the costs and the benefits are. And that's quite a big assessment that's going on at the moment, and we'll bring that forward to management team in terms of the resource implications. We expect, as we move through March, to secure for 1st of April living wage accreditation for the council. Colleagues in procurement are working with the Living Wage Foundation, and the indications are we're on track to achieve that. In terms of emerging challenges, nothing I think surprising in there. What will be the emerging picture on national public finances following May elections, and what impact will that have on Midlothian, and how does that journey take us through into when we will get hopefully a three-year financial settlement in the late autumn of 2016. So there's a lot will happen over the next few months. It will give us greater clarity on what prospects for the next few years will be. And in delivery on two critical change projects, the review of local government paying grading and the ISS review, the latter being really looking internally at the service and how we can further reduce costs, simplify what we do, and be more effective and efficient. Happy to pause there, Chair, and take any questions.
Chair Gary. Questions? Lisa?
Thanks, Derek. The issue of the fire at Hopefield and the records that were lost there, I understand that some of those records are not duplicated elsewhere, and there have been some issues arising from lack of information. Is there any place whereby those records that were held at Hopefield that were lost, that there is another record held somewhere within the system, but not necessarily at this time so easily traceable? Because I've been given different answers from different officers that went on specific inquiries that there were no duplicates. In other cases, there may be duplicates, but we're not sure where they are. Thank you.
Yeah, we used Hopefield for a variety of records, but it was really deep storage of records that we didn't anticipate would be required. And there are undoubtedly records that were stored there for which there is no other copy. But I think the risk associated with that was relatively low. So I know, for example, there were some payroll records that was it, and there was no other way of getting that information. Certainly, I haven't been made aware of any pressing issue that's causing an issue as though from the loss of those records. We had full disclosure to the Information Commissioner, if that's the right body, there's so many of them, and they were comfortable with the arrangements we had in place with that facility and the way we responded to the incident. But yeah, there will inevitably be some issues that will arise where we wish you had the information, but we just don't have it, and we'll have to work our way around that.
Any other questions for Ricky? Ian?
Thank you, Chair. Going back to the statement by the First Minister a week or two back on the change to the council tax banding, and making the not unreasonable assumption she'll still be First Minister in a year's time, do we have enough information to quantify how much extra income we would get, leaving aside the maximum 3% council tax increase? I'm just talking about the increased take from the top four bands. Do we have any idea how much that would bring in to Midlothian?
Only insofar as the information that's been published by government and by SPICE, the national figure, if my memory serves me right, from the banding changes was £100 million. Now, Midlothian's about 1.5% of Scotland, so £1.5 million. There are changes to the council tax reduction scheme as well, and I haven't seen any information that quantifies what the impact of that would be. So, and I know officers in COSLA are working on trying to get some clarity on what the overall position would be for local government. The potential for a 3% increase in our case is in the region of £1.2 million. I suppose I would put the 1.5 million and the 1.2 million in the context of the pressures that members saw in yesterday's budget for future years.
Any other questions? Okay, thanks, Gary. Now move on to item 4.3, Property and Facilities Management. Gary Sherritt.
Thanks, Chair. Similar to the other two heads of service, I'll go through the summary sheets and then pause for questions. Under asset management rationalisation, as has been previously noted, the move into Midlothian House has been completed now, and we've seen people bedding into the refurbished areas on the first and second floors. That doesn't stop at that. We've got further work that we're continuing on in the depot and the potential relocation of that we will conclude and bring forward during quarter four, and also the Dalkey Town Centre feasibility study, which we are bringing to a seminar on Monday next week. The disposal of the redundant buildings continues. Some of that is determined by the adjacencies to other services, usages, and getting the best value remains a combined effort between the directorates within the council. Phase two housing, we've completed the three sites at Pennycook, and we're now moving on to the Edgefield Road, Poulton Street, and the two sites at Greenhall, making progress on each of those. The demolition at New Byers has actually started. There, the disconnection of services having been complete. The delay on starting the physical demolition was due to the fact that there was challenges from the companies that we are taking legal action against, and obviously they had to do their own due diligence, and indeed they want to inspect the foundations when the demolition gets to that stage. In terms of the claim, we are looking to pull the summons together for that following those inspections and aim to put them together into April this year. In terms of emerging challenges, we in facility services are seeing new fast food outlets unfortunately coming around high schools, and that will affect our meal numbers. There have been challenges elsewhere surrounding these catering vans, and we see varying results as to how that affects the take-up in school meals, but it is a challenge for us. The nursery sector and the emerging increase in numbers of children going into nursery tuition will have an impact on our school meal provision, and we're looking in advance of need on that one, and looking at how we can structure our delivery of meals and accommodating the eating of those meals at the nurseries. We're also looking at the provision of space for the children to be accommodated within the education sector there as well. Absence and vacancy I've noted as a challenge. It sounds a bit glib to put that in time and again, but if you take one particular Monday in the last fortnight, we had 250 hours missing in one day. That gives you the scale of what the absence means to us, and that is a constant challenge for us to keep our budget under control, because we have to substitute staff and bring them in, because without them we can't deliver the school meals and we can't actually function. So that remains a real challenge for us in trying to improve our absence management. I do want to highlight the next one, which is that we've been the best performer in our building cleaning under the APSE guidelines for the fourth time in the last 5 years. That's not insignificant. I mean, that's a real accolade that we should be proud of within Midlothian. Moving on to building services, our housing stock now 100% meets the SHQS standard, We do have exemptions in there where we've not managed to gain access to certain houses, but those that we have, we are now 100% compliant there. We've secured £5.6 million towards energy efficiency projects since 2011, and that continues. We're constantly seeking out new ways of sourcing the funding and indeed securing that. And again, we've been successful since the start of this year in securing further funds, which we'll be bringing forward and giving ideas on how we develop the use of that money very shortly. In property assets, following on from that same theme, we're developing solar energy proposals and preparing a report which we aim to bring back very shortly, in conjunction with APSE, who have been very helpful following the seminar that we had tail end of last year. Our proposals for investment in our ageing industrial estates, for a long period there was no real constant improvement or indeed maintenance of these estates, and we've now made sure that the funds that we receive from the rental income is put aside and properly factored into maintaining and upgrading the landscaping, the painting work, the doors and the security lighting of these estates. And as a result, we're seeing our occupancy rates in the 90%, which is great news from our point of view. The asset register is now complete and should be available into this coming quarter. And finally, in sport and leisure, the outdated till system is due to be replaced by the end of this calendar year with a new point of sale, and we're going through the testing ground with our various tenderers at this present time. Pause and take questions now, Chair.
Cheers, Gary. Thank you. Lisa.
If I could just say thank you very much to everyone in your team who's involved in the provision and service of school meals, because I think we're all very proud of the Midlothian's record on school meals. But I note from the emerging challenges that clearly we're at capacity, and so that the request for the nursery sector to be provided with school meals is quite understandably proving to be a challenge. Given that we have a policy of collaborative working with other organisations, in particular colleges and universities that are our neighbours in Midlothian, has any work been done to consider the possibility, because I know that there have been other projects where, especially in regard to Edinburgh College, where we've looked at the potential to use their very well-equipped kitchens and their very able staff and students to assist us in various projects. I wondered, has that been considered? Is it being explored? And if not, could it be? But over and above that, one of my concerns is around the long overdue point of sale system for our sports and leisure. I know that, Gary, you and I have had many conversations on this subject where we've long bewailed the fact that the library's got the state-of-the-art IT system while our leisure centres were losing money hand over fist because of the lack of an appropriate system. Is it likely that we will see the cost of this change of provision washing its face within a short time because of the upgraded income that we will see coming just from the fact we're able to keep tabs on who's paying as opposed to using out-of-date platinum cards and similar?
Firstly, thanks for the comments on the school meals. The collaboration with the colleges, I think, yes, you're right, we should be exploring all manner of trying to satisfy the successful uptake we've got. I think we're a victim of our own success because we've got so many children taking up the school meals. We are the highest in the mainland of Scotland, so space is at its limit, and of course the capacity in the kitchens is also at its limit. So anything to help, then we should be exploring. So yes, I'll be looking at that as an angle to explore. Primary ones to primary threes getting free school meals is keeping that number very high as well. So if the government want to see nursery schools follow that same younger child getting the free school meals, we'll just see a huge increase in our numbers. And obviously that's our concern at this stage. We don't know the detail around that, but we're anticipating that it might have that same sort of high percentage of uptake. So capacity in providing the meals and then the space to deliver the meals is our concern that we're trying to address just now. On the point of sale, the intention is obviously to get and capture anybody who's dodging the payment at the moment, if you want to call it that. And we do expect to see the returns, and we've actually put that into the previous reports on why we want the point of sale there, that we do capture those with outdated cards so that when they access the centres, it fires that up straight in front of the receptionist, who can then deal with it at the point of sale.
Jim.
Thanks, Gary. The issue or the council now having 100% of its housing stock meeting the Scottish Housing Quality Standard. This has been achieved through various work programmes and exemptions. Can I maybe just explore and exemptions a wee bit? The reason I'm just to give you some background so you'll realise where I'm coming from. Lisa and I used to bang on all the time about a couple of areas within respective wards. Lisa and Path Head, myself, Middleton. Path Head resolved the situation when we were, because we had enough houses there to enable us to make a contribution towards getting gas put into these properties. Now, we can't do that in Middleton because there's no enough. The council doesn't have enough houses there at the moment. I'd be interested to understand how we've overcome that issue, or when we talk about them being 100%, are we actually saying that we've managed to get some kind of permission to discount some, which is all right as far as your stats are concerned, but no very good for the people that are actually living there and no getting the same kind of conditions in reality in the houses as everybody else is supposed to be getting under the quality standard.
That's an absolute fair point. I think the exemptions, in terms of percentage numbers that we're talking about, are extremely low that fall into that category, first of all. But in the outlying areas, as you say, that don't have the gas supply, we are looking at alternatives. And we're looking at ground source heat distribution at the moment as one potential solution. And we're running some trials there on that potential now. I've worked in that sector previously for large office blocks, and some are successful, some are not so successful. So getting it right, in particular because it's people's homes as opposed to an office place, is absolutely paramount to us. So I think we've got to do the trial first and then roll that out. But the intention is to make sure that people don't suffer just because of their locality as opposed to being part of an urban situation.
In that case, if that's the way it is, I think it's maybe no right that we actually claim to be 100%, because that sends the wrong message to people who are living in houses, knowing that they're not meeting the standards. You know, if we're 99% or 98%, I think we should actually say that and explain that there are problems in achieving the other two, rather than suggest that we're 100% when we actually aren't.
I think it's showing consistency. That's what we're doing. Now, we report in the same way that everybody else reports. If everybody else is reporting exemptions on the same basis, then we've got to follow that same path. I think what you're saying is maybe we should highlight the areas where we've got exemptions and know what they are, and I'm quite happy to do that.
I would rather we were a council that actually said it was 98 and were genuinely reporting 100 when we get to it. The fact that other councils are reporting in that way, it doesn't make any difference to the people that are living in the houses that didn't meet the standard.
Any other questions, Ian?
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering if you could give me a broad idea of what the £5.6 million of funding secured to deliver energy efficiency projects since 2011 would cover. It seems quite an impressive amount.
Yeah, that's in part to do with the LED lighting provision that we've got. We've put in through our street lighting. We're rolling that out into sports areas as well, but it doesn't stop at that. We've got the insulation programme to all the houses, and obviously the roofing and things like that you put into everybody's loft space. So it's going back to the preventative measures that we're trying to put in place as opposed to renewable energies at this point in time. And then once we've got that in place so that we use the minimum amount of electricity and heat, then we can look at the renewable sources to follow on from that.
Is Brian.
The asset register I've had reasons to make inquiries about the asset register in the past, and I wonder if this is a document that you will circulate, or is it circulated on request, or you're proposing to just, you know, give it to us all, you know.
Are you asking for a bride?
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Is that okay? Circulate that.
And the other point you mentioned about a depot transfer, I just wonder what the process for that and what kind of consultations is involved in that.
The asset register will be a web-based one, so it'll be free for everybody to access. So that's what we've said we'd do, and that's what we will do. In terms of the depot, we're still going through the feasibility study on that one. Once we've got an answer on that, I think the intention is to then look at the consultation process and be open and above board, as we should do with everything we do. But we're a wee bit early in the stage to do that.
Okay. Is there any other questions? Lisa?
Thank you. If I can just come back on the point that Jim was making and lend my support to Jim's position. I mean, clearly we were able to access Scottish Government funding because of the air quality problems that were in Pathhead, and from there we were able to roll it out to those settlements that were within geographical and topographical potentially achievable situations, which meant that some of the communities like Middleton, like Cowsland, missed out. And the point Jim's making, I take very seriously, supportively of him, because when I visit some of my constituents in houses that where it doesn't matter how often they run the heating and for how long, they cannot afford to heat their homes at all, and their children coming home into those homes from school who are huddling under blankets to do their homework, which is morally offensive at the very least. And I'm sure I know that you will share that concern, but it's not enough that we share the concern. It's important that we do something about it and do it as quickly as possible. And there are, while they may not be great in number for those families in that situation, it is absolutely appalling, and it does a great deal to damage their long-term health as well as their ability as young people to achieve. And the quality for older people obviously inhibits their movement, their activity, and therefore their long-term potential of quality of life and longevity of good quality life. So in all of that, can we look at alternative solutions in the short term? And I realise we're doing a great deal on the insulation programme. Can we not look at more of that elsewhere, rather than just looking at the conurbations, where, as Jim makes the point, there's about clusters of quantity that make it easily viable. Can we not look at those rural communities where we have a number of families in serious deprivation when we're looking at fuel poverty and quality of life poverty in real terms? There must be other shorter term solutions, because where we're looking at the potential for ground source heat, that's a longer term project. These are people's lives passing.
Gary.
The criteria for the insulation programmes are very specific. But I can take your concerns and have a look at whether or not they can be addressed within that criteria.
Yep. Okay, if there are no further questions, thank you. Now move on to item 4.4, Ms. Lothian Council. Kenneth.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, what we have here is a summary of issues which have been dealt with in the various reports that you've seen already. So I'll be very brief. I mean, there's clearly a lot of areas where I think we're progressing well as a council, where we're being innovative, and you can see some of the results of that. There's clearly also areas where we have quite a bit more to do. In relation to the big challenges, all the information we have suggests that the financial challenge going forward will be very significant. Alongside that, we have health and social care integration. I don't think we should underestimate the scale of that challenge, particularly given the cost pressures in the health sector. And in terms of the impact of new legislation on both education and children's services, which are areas where we're trying to deliver substantial amounts of transformational change and improvement. Chair, I'm happy to take any questions that members may have.
Does anybody have any questions for Kenneth? I think most of everything has been covered through the reports. Okay, move on to the last item for today, is the local government benchmarking framework results.
Yes, thank you, Chair. We had what I think was quite an informative session on briefing on this a couple of weeks ago. So, again, I'll be relatively brief in my introduction. And the overall performance on the face of it is actually fairly mixed. I mean, more in the top half than in the bottom half, but perhaps more in the top, in the bottom quarter than we would expect. When we had the briefing, it was accepted, I think, the value of some of the benchmarks is limited. There are clearly some that are important to us. We want to improve attainment, we want better recycling rates, we want to have an improved rate of council tax collection, and we want to meet the Scottish Housing Quality standard. And, you know, that's one of the areas where, thinking back to the previous conversation, there is a, you know, a set formula for that, and so we do measure it in relation to that set formula. Some of the benchmark indicators are much less transparent, much less easy to understand. I think a lot of the financial measures seem to be measured differently in different places, and that makes the comparability a bit questionable. And as a council, in response to consultation, we are lobbying for, you know, straightforward, meaningful indicators, particularly in adult health and social care, where I think the indicators are very unsatisfactory. The other major point I'd make is you can look at the indicators as falling into different categories. Some are genuine measures of performance, some are measures of financial performance or cost, and others are customer satisfaction measures from the Scottish Household Survey. In relation to the latter one, I mean, this, what is really striking is that all of our indicators from the Scottish Household Survey are in the bottom two quartiles. And, you know, that does raise questions about customer service, about the reliability of some of these, because actually when we do local surveys, particularly about leisure centres or libraries, people are very positive about them, and yet, you know, our comparator compared to others on the household survey seem to be very weak. I think our cost indicators are pretty mixed. I talked about the reliability of them earlier. In terms of the performance indicators, we've actually got most of them in the upper two quartiles. That's where we are stronger. So there's quite a lot of detail here, Chair. We've had some good discussion on this previously. Clearly some areas where we need to improve, and it's pretty obvious what some of them are. Happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions, Chris Gass? No, but we're happy to note the recommendations in section 5 of the report. Okay, and thank you for your attendance.